And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 27th, 2022. The Earth's carbon dioxide level is 420.52 parts per million, and that's the highest it's been in 5 million years. There are 8 remaining years until 2030. Anyway, here in the Boston area, there are ongoing issues of fossil fuel infrastructure and local environmental justice that we need to concern ourselves with. You should know, for the purposes of understanding what we hope to talk about, is that Weymouth is a town south of Boston on the shore, very old, historically important town, goes way back to the founding of our country. About 5, 6, 7 years ago, a company called Enbridge decided to push a pipeline called the Atlantic Bridge Pipeline through New England, and in particular through Weymouth. And in even more particular, they decided to put into this town of Weymouth, right on the shore where the storm waters are coming, what's called a compressor plant, which is basically a structure that accepts the gas pipeline and it repressurizes the gas in the pipeline. It compresses the gas so that it can keep flowing off to Canada, where evidently Enbridge expects to export it. Anyway, the people in Weymouth have been fighting this for years now, primarily by objecting to the permits that are given, right? So the feds have to give permits to a compressor plant, state has to give permits, the localities have to give permits. So there's a whole bunch of permits that have to go on. At the federal level, the people that are involved in granting permits is an organization called FERC, which is an acronym for Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, right? And in the past, FERC has been accused of being a controlled agency. I forget what the word, but basically controlled by the industry, right? Due to the good efforts of the people in Weymouth who made an appeal, FERC decided to rethink a little bit, or reexamine its decision to grant a permit to this Weymouth compressor station. And unbelievably enough, FERC came back and said, yeah, we made a boo-boo. We did a wrong thing there, but sorry, we can't change anything, which is mind-numbing all by itself. But in order to get the real story and to really find out what the status is and what's going on and what how we should think about this latest turn of events, we are thrilled to have with us Alice Arena, who is, in my estimation, an extremely important person in the, shall we say, the resistance movement in Weymouth, Massachusetts, that is pushing back against this compressor. So, Alice, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Thank you, Ted, for having me on again. We're doing okay here in Weymouth.
So I gave that little preamble about, you know, what's happened, right? The buzzwords are Weymouth Compressor Station, Enbridge, Atlantic Bridge, permits from FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Did I get that more or less right? Or what should people, in your, you know, you've got the latest and greatest. What should people know about what's happening in Weymouth right now?
Yeah, you did a really good job, a concise version of kind of what the details are, you know, sort of the on the ground black and white kind of things are. But what people need to know further is that not only is this sited right on the water, it is on a piece of, we'll call it land, that's actually just landfill. It was interesting. We had a map when we were in the appeal for waterways from, I think it was like 1868 or somewhere in that area, and there was actually no land where that compressor station is sitting. So it's sort of like on the back bay, right? It's landfill. And so it's not in a very good area. It is a flood zone, and it is smack dab in the middle of multiple environmental justice neighborhoods, right next to a brand new $500 million bridge that, you know, if there's an accident, well, bye-bye bridge. And it's just a location that, and it's highly, highly populated. You know, we talk about the town of Weymouth, but we've got the city of Quincy right across the river, less than 0.2 mile away. And we have the town of Braintree, and the area, I mean, the town of Weymouth is close to 60,000 people. So we are a very, very big town. And so it's an urban location, extremely congested. And guess what? If there's an accident, there's only one way out.
I think that's an excellent point you make, Alice, because having been there, it's remarkable how packed everything is on top of each other at that site, right? There's a bridge, there's the compressor, but the compressor is right next to a shipping channel. And there's like five or six other oil infrastructure things crowded in around it. And people living in the same neighborhood. I mean, it's really remarkable that I guess I will say that there is a Twitter handle called, it's not Elf on the Shelf, because that's like a elf on what is it?
Elf on site.
Elf on site, which puts up pictures of this. So they can begin to get a feel of how everything is so stuck together there in Weymouth. So, okay. So you're absolutely right. It's like, a little ticking time bomb among other very dangerous infrastructure with people living nearby, right? So, okay, man.
Yeah.
So what are the implications of that?
Well, I mean, one other structure that I forgot to mention, and this is important when we think about FERC's little decision here, is that it is less than, we did a tape measure of it, so it's about 174 feet away from the MW, this is Massachusetts Water Resources Authority, pumping station. And that pumping station, not only is that a methane bomb all on its own, and we won't go into that, that pumping station serves 14, I believe, towns on the South Shore and processes 60 million gallons of sewage a day. Now, PHMSA has a regulation. PHMSA is the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. They have a regulation that says you cannot build a compressor station, catch this, too close to a building that you don't own. Okay? So we went to PHMSA and we said, can you define too close for us? Is it 5 feet? Is it 100 feet? Is it 500 feet? Oh, we don't know.
Really?
We don't know. Just too close. So one of FERC's, and you did bring up the whole FERC debacle here, one of FERC's things to us was, well, you know, you should take this all up with PHMSA. We did take it up with PHMSA going on 8 years ago. And this is what they did. It was like a Three Stooges routine. We went to FERC and we said, consider safety, consider siting. And they said, that's not our job. Talk to PHMSA. We went to PHMSA. We said, you've got to consider safety. You've got to consider siting. And they said, that's not our job. Talk to FERC.
Really? Really?
And this is exactly what has gone on. And it's not just us. And if you'll allow me just to riff a little bit on this, we here in the basin have never, ever considered this a NIMBY fight, a not in my backyard fight. This fight, yes, it is in our backyard. And the danger and the health problems, the environmental and economic problems are all ours. We get to own it, and Enbridge gets to take the money. But it is a much bigger problem. Because when we're talking about climate change, you know, you mentioned the CO2 levels. This is just, it's an example of what goes horribly wrong. And since the FERC decision, we actually have been reached out to by several other organizations in other states that are fighting similar situations, pipelines, compressor stations, and they are talking to us saying, okay, you've kind of laid the groundwork here. FERC admitted a mistake. Where do we go from here? Because in the case of one situation, it's not built, fully built yet. In the case of another situation, it's a a person who was saying that the compressor station that's operating in her area is so egregious that they don't even know what to do. And no one is taking responsibility. No one is looking at any of this. And you were looking for a word for FERC. And all I could think of was what Robert Kennedy from the NRDC said. He said, FERC is a rogue organization. And I also want to point out, because I have to keep saying this because it makes me crazy, one of the things that we have on tap right now is a court case. And it was a decision that FERC made to reauthorize the certificate, to extend the certificate back in December of 2018. And I do like to mention that Chairman Glick was on the commission at that time. And there was no objection from him or anyone else.
Alice, tell me, you mentioned the mistake that FERC admitted making. Tell me more about that. What was the sequence? What was the beginning of that process where FERC came out and said they didn't do the job correctly? How did that go?
So I believe it was in, and it's hard. I do have to forgive me. We've got so many court cases going. Oh, yeah. But in October, I believe, of 2020. Yes, October of 2020, we filed a rehearing request with FERC on the authorization for Enbridge to operate. So they had been given the authorization to construct in 2019. They were fully constructed by September of 2020. FERC then had to give them the operator's license. We filed against it, you know, which is kind of a standard thing that you do. We filed against that. And what was beautiful was they had given them the operator's permit, and the very next day they had an accident. And a week later they had another accident. And so we had a 30-day.
This is saying that this place is brand spanking new compressor, as we said, on the waterfront, on floodable land. Within hours of starting operation, it has something that's got to shut down, right? They got to shut the whole thing down. Boom.
And yep.
Amazing.
Yep. So one of the accidents was what I like to call operator headspace. They were in such a hurry to construct it. They did a very poor job, which of course is very dangerous for us. But they put in a piece of the operating pipeline, and this was inside of the building, I believe. No, I take that back. It was outside of the building, thank God. And when they put this piece in, they didn't check it to see that everything was operational within this piece. There was supposed to have been what they call an O-ring in there. There wasn't. There was a piece of cardboard. They didn't know it. And when they turned on the gas the first time, and it was a miracle what happened. There were workers on the site. They turned on the gas. They released 170,000 cubic feet at ground level. It is a miracle. Nobody threw a cigarette out the window. It's a miracle. Oh, man. The workers then had to manually shut it down because the emergency shutdown system wasn't operating. And what happened, the sequence was that it happened. All of a sudden, the Quincy Fire Department, now remember I told you, Quincy's 0.2 miles across the river. The wind was blowing in that direction. The Quincy Fire Department started lighting up, getting calls. I smell gas. So North Weymouth said, well, we didn't smell anything. And we had people running down to, you know, and now one of our elves said to me today, she said, and I thought to myself, I jumped in my car and I ran down there and thought, what the heck am I doing? This could have blown up. I said, yeah, see, think about that next time.
It's astounding. I just want to go the O-ring. Okay. people of a certain age will remember the Challenger space shuttle that blew up. Okay. The O-ring, an O-ring is this thin piece of plastic, almost like the kind of stuff you put in a screen. You know, when you have a screen and you press the little plastic tubing in around the outside of a screen to hold it in place. That's what an O-ring is. But what it does is it's soft, and you press two pieces of pipe together and it makes a nice seal, just the way the two pieces of the Challenger rocket ship were sort of pressed together to make that. And I know I've used O-rings in sort of technical vacuum systems. If you don't have an O-ring, you know, your vacuum is not going to work. So the idea that they could put, essentially try and join two pipes that are supposed to be sealed at the joint of the two pipes with an O-ring, but then forget to put the O-ring in, is a colossal mistake. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you get fired for in most places, and they got away with it, right?
Wow. Yeah, of course they did. Wow. Of course they did. Wow. They, you know, the FIMSA. Now, FIMSA did not shut them down on that first accident. So about a week later, approximately a week later, no, the first accident happened. They were able to identify exactly what the problem was. Okay, so they knew. Okay, so fine, you can fix that, whatever. That was September 11th. And I believe it was September 29th, they had their second accident. And the second accident, they released over 200,000 cubic feet of gas. It was an emergency shutdown. The system blew off all of this gas. And they still do not know what caused it. And FIMSA accepted from them a failure analysis report that a fifth grader should be embarrassed to write. Right. And FIMSA accepted that. But that happened on the 29th. It was only the day after, the very day after FERC had said, you can go ahead and turn on the gas. Now, we immediately filed a rehearing on the authorization to operate based on these two accidents. And FERC had been sued just prior to that, a case that they lost, that they were actively withholding judgments on rehearing requests, thereby issuing a quasi-tolling order without issuing a tolling order. And for people who don't understand, a tolling order means that they're saying, okay, we're going to look at your complaint, but while we're looking at your complaint, the company can operate or construct or whatever. And it was a tool that they used against people like us so that by the time they made their decision, something was already constructed or the gas was already flowing.
In fact, on the ground.
Right. So they were taken to court saying that you cannot withhold judgment on these rehearing requests as a way of this de facto tolling, making a de facto tolling order. And they lost. So we filed for a rehearing request, and within the mandatory 30 days, they sent us a, yeah, forget it. We don't want to hear it. So the good thing about that is we could immediately take them to court. So we immediately filed in the First Circuit against them, you know, with this rehearing request. Well, so this is October, November of 2020. In December of 2020, and it's something that was like, how did we get on the docket? Are you sure that's us? That's the wrong number, whatever. They put us on the docket, and Neil Chatterjee.
This is the docket of the agenda for a FERC meeting.
For right? FERC, yeah. This is the agenda for FERC. And they put us on there, and we had no idea, we didn't know what they were talking about. But when they issue a refusal on a rehearing request now, there's a line in it that says, we're refusing you this rehearing request, but we might change our mind. It's this crazy wording. So Chatterjee brings up, you know, maybe we should look at Weymouth again. Maybe there's something going on. And right at that time, Commissioner Clement had just been seated. So they said, okay, we'll put it off a month because we have a new member and they want to come up to speed. That was fine. So we're like, what is going on here? So by the time they got to the January hearing,
2021.
I believe that that meeting, the FERC monthly meeting, was on January 19th. It was one day before Biden was signed into office. And the docket, the agenda was just full of all of these projects that then Chair Danley wanted to push through, right? They were going to rubber stamp everything. But Weymouth Compressor Station was on there again. And this time, because Chatterjee voted with the Democrats, Danley lost. And they said, we are going to move forward with examining the Weymouth Compressor Station.
Danley, yeah. Chatterjee, and Glick are commissioners on the FER commission, right? The Federal Energy Regulatory. So these are the people that are making the call, the actual humans that are. Okay, good.
Right. Yep. So Danley at the time was the Republican chair. But at that vote, it was Chatterjee, Clement, and Glick who voted to continue the discussion of Weymouth, and Danley and Christie who voted against it. Now, so it got pushed forward to February. On January 21st, Joe Biden made Glick the chairman of FERC. Okay. So bye-bye, Danley. So in February of 2021, they had their meeting, and we were on the agenda, and they came out and said, we are asking for a paper briefing on Weymouth. We have these three multi-part questions. They dealt with climate. They dealt with environmental justice. They dealt with necessity. Like, did they even need this compressor station?
That rewinds the idea that, I mean, all this compressor station is going to pump gas, not to New England, but they're going to pump it on up to Canada and export it, right? So why is it necessary for, anyway, please continue.
Right, exactly. And so we were like, okay, what's going on here? And of course, I'm talking to our lawyer, I'm talking to the lawyer, other lawyers, and they're saying, and I said, okay, what are we doing? And they said, we don't know. FERC's never done this before. Okay, we're just going to file a brief on these questions. And so we gathered our allies. I was shocked. The NRDC filed an amicus brief for us, Sierra Club, Food and Water Watch, Conservation Law Foundation, Mothers Out Front, and then a host of other people filed amicus briefs on our behalf, including Attorney General Maura Healey's office. And then, of course, we filed our brief. The industry went bonkers. They were filing briefs. They're a place I'm going, who's this company in Alaska that's filing a brief? They were all, FERC can't do this. They can't look backwards. Once they signed on the dotted line, we have to be assured that we can construct and we can rip off the public.
You're right. To put a point on that, it's like the industry freaked out because if FERC turned around and rejected the permit for Weymouth, it would set a precedent for the whole country and all the other gas industry infrastructure that's being. So basically, Weymouth is the thin edge of the wedge here, or the tip of the spear in terms of, which is why it's so important, as you said before. Okay, so you've got all NRDC and all the good guys putting in stuff. You've got all the oil industry putting in these amicus briefs, which amicus is Latin for friend of the court, friend, right? So the friend of the court, just sort of advice to the court how to think about it and continue with it. I'm jaw dropped here listening to this story.
I know, it's crazy, right? So the briefs were due in April. And then, of course, you have reply briefs. The reply brief was due in May. And that's where we try to read what the industry is saying. They read what we're saying. We say they're lying. They say we're lying. And, you know, it's kind of a free-for-all. So we filed those by the end of May. Then we sat there and twiddled our thumbs because Neil Chatterjee's term ended on June 30th. And then President Biden had to put a new nominee on FERC. The nominee was not, didn't come out until, gosh, I think October, might have been September, but September or October.
All of 21.
Right, all of 21, because the person was named, it was Willie Phillips, and Commissioner Phillips was named, and then they had to, he had to go through Senate confirmation, so there's another, you know, couple weeks, whatever. By the time Commissioner Phillips got seated, it was December. So they didn't bring us up in December. And I said, you know what, guys, my money's on February, because, you know, he'll get seated in December, he'll get his feet wet in January, and they'll put us on February. But the Sunshine Notice, which is the agenda, came out in early January, and there we were.
Really?
So we were on there, you know, we let everyone know, go to the meeting, listen in, see what they say.
And just the stakes here are, again, is this is now the reformulated FERC commissioners having a hearing in which they're going to consider the whether or not the license to operate should be granted to this compressor station, or they're going to think about that license, right?
Actually, no. Actually, they were looking all the way back to the original certificate and saying, should the original certificate ever have been granted?
Really?
So it was like even, you know, even mm-hmm. a bigger mm-hmm. deal. And so when you think about this, Commissioner Glick, Chairman Glick came out and said, well, maybe it shouldn't have ever been granted. Okay, we're going back to 2017 now, when it was granted, January of 2017. And we're sitting there just sort of like dumbfounded, but then waiting, okay, waiting for the next shoe to drop. But there's not anything we can do about it. There's no regulation. There's no law. We can't do anything about it. Geez, we're sorry, Weymouth. We'll try to do better going forward. We'll look at climate. We'll look at environmental justice and all of these things that we've ignored for, 60 years?
That's amazing. Basically, they came out and said, we did not follow, I guess, our own process. It was flawed process, but it's done and we can't change it. So the Weymouth compressor for FERC says we have to stand by the certificate from 2017. Really? That's amazing.
Yep. Now, but here's a little interesting tidbit. We had filed way back in 2018, maybe January of 2019. On December, okay, let me explain something about the industry. They'll file for a certificate, and let's say the certificate is granted. FERC then gives them 2 years to construct and operate their facility. It's usually 2 years. It might be longer if it's a much bigger project. But in this case, the certificate for the Atlantic Bridge, which included the Weymouth Compressor Station, was 2 years to be fully constructed and operational. And that included the Weymouth Compressor Station. It's very common for the industry to have hit permit snags or whatever. And so that 2 years might not be enough time. So they will file usually within 30 days of the certificate renewal or the certificate coming
expiration,
due,
yeah.
They will file and say, hey, can we have an extension? And FERC rubber stamps extensions all the time. It's, you know, it's just the way it is. So we were expecting that. But here's what actually happened. Early in the morning of December 26, 2018, Enbridge filed. Now, the certificate would have expired on January 26th of 2019. So 30 days prior to the expiration, this is common, they file for an extension. Now, what was supposed to have happened was that their request goes to the secretary, goes to the commissioners, and they go, yeah. And then they vote to give them the extension. And then that's put on the agenda for the January meeting. And they say, well, you know, they asked for an extension and we said yes. And here's why we said yes, because it's a wonderful project, whatever. That's not what happened. 31 minutes, because they're all timestamped, 31 minutes after FERC received this request, they turned around and said, yep, it's granted, bye. It never was on the meeting. They did not discuss this at the meeting in January. The person who signed it was not authorized to sign this extension. And under FERC's regulations, they have to discuss it. The commissioners, and they can all just say, yeah, right? But they have to discuss it. There was no discussion. So what I would say to Chairman Glick right now, who was on the commission on that date, there was your watershed moment, my friend, to stop and say, geez, these guys have had 2 years to construct and operate. What the heck is going on in Weymouth? Let's take a little look at what the heck is going on in Weymouth. Nope. So we are still in court with that.
That just seems like flat out illegal. I mean, you have to follow the process. I mean, is that not sufficient? So tell me, the you've got this, I keep going to sort of Catholic phrases, like mea culpa from the from FERC saying, yes, we did it wrong. Too bad. You have to live with it, but we did it wrong. We'll try better next time. Where does that put you and the Four River Friends Against the Compressor? I mean, is it something you could use in court? And you go back and say, well, they said it was wrong, and they're still wrong when they don't change, deny the permit. And then the other question I have, Alice, is you talked about the people calling you up in different projects. Can they use what the FERC admitting error, is that now going to be useful to them? So two things. One, what do you do next? What do the Weymouth people do next? And what does everyone else do next, given this sort of weird, I'll put up a link to it, this weird press release saying we did it wrong, but it all stands. What's the story there?
So in terms of what we're going to do, we're still working on our strategy. Mm-hmm. We're big ones here at FRAX for strategizing and trying to make sure, we look at the goal. What's the goal? Okay, and what's our best way to get there? Do we go after the politicians? Do we take them to court? Do we, protest? Whatever. What are we going to do? So we're still working on our strategies. We do have, again, like I said, we're in federal court with this request on the 2-year extension of the certificate. And we are in Superior Court here in Massachusetts on the waterways permit. So we still have 2 court cases left. And so we're not abandoning any of that. So we're going to move, when we're moving forward, we will also be engaging PHMSA again and FERC again and our congressmen and senators and all of our representatives, because here's another fun fact for you. Yesterday, the town of Weymouth received notification that Enbridge is going to be doing resiliency upgrades to this compressor that, I'll tell you, Ted, is not operating. It has not operated yet.
Really?
The coldest weather here, it has been silent for probably well over a month and a half to 2 months. It's not operating. We know that they have got some major, major problems. We just don't know what they are. So we will continue to engage all the powers that be, all the agencies that be, and we're going to say, do your damn job. You never did your job in the first place. Do your damn job. And we're not going away. We can be very annoying. So,
is do you think that this could be, should be? So, of course, here in Massachusetts, it's all political. There is a governor's race. Charlie Baker will no longer be the governor. What, in a year? Could a governor have some sort of de facto to say don't grant that permit or what? Do you have a thought about that? Not that, I mean, I don't even know where the gubernatorial candidates stand on all this, but I mean, what role does the governor have now?
Well,
or future governor, I guess. I should
say. The future governor could use and mandate through their Department of Environmental Protection, through the Office of Energy and Environment, Coastal Zone Management. There's a whole lot of agencies that the governor can use for enforcement. Now, this is interesting because here's another weird little fact. We have air quality monitors all around the basin, and these are small, what we call purple air monitors. They're not, you know, they're all over the country. You can look it up, purple air. And it shows us what the particulate matter is at any instant. You could go on right now and look. Now, there are limits, legal limits to particulate matter. And over this cold snap, our particulate matter has been through the roof. So if 50 is the top level, that's as high as you want to go, that's green, up to 50. 50 to, I believe, about 100 starts going yellow, orange. Orange over 100, 150 is really bad. We've been in the yellow and orange on a daily basis. In the last couple of days, in the last couple of cold snaps, it's been in these dangerous levels. And what this means is it's not just sensitive people, okay, people who have asthma or COPD or heart disease. It's the average Joe walking down the street who is now going to be exposed to dangerous levels of particulate matter.
And just to put that in context, people, the particulate matter is something, these little tiny particles that can float on the air. So it's not like dust on the ground. I mean, this is stuff you can breathe in and out, right?
Yeah.
And it's not, I think, in size, it's not that different from sort of COVID aerosol blobs of COVID, right? These are all 2.5
exactly.
Micron, little tiny things can float around. And what you're saying is those are, given the cold, which is then dense, low-lying air, right? I mean, that you're getting these really, really high levels of the particulate, 2.5 micron particulate levels that you're sensing. Wow. And you're saying the governor could do something about that. A governor
yes.
could do something about that.
Because, you know why? Here's the crazy thing. You know, this is our theory, but we know that we're correct and we can actually go back and prove it. We've just got to get the paperwork. Enbridge is shorting the gas to the two power plants right next door, to Braintree Electric and to Calpine. They're shorting them on the gas, and so they're burning dirty, filthy diesel.
Oh, wow. You mean, let me say that back to make sure I understand it. You're saying that the compressor plant, Enbridge, is supposed to be supplying natural gas to these two other power plants that are right on top of Weymouth, right all there. They can't do it. And so now those two other plants have to use more dirty fuel, dirtier sort of bunker oil fuel, and then you get more particulates. Wow.
Bingo.
You belong with Sherlock Holmes in Hercule Poirot as a sleuth, man. That's great.
It's crazy. And actually, Braintree Electric Light filed an amicus brief as well because Enbridge has been shorting them and shorting Calpine for the last 2 years or more. The reason they're being shorted, they refuse to sign long-term contracts with Enbridge. I'm talking 20-year contracts.
Wow.
For gas. And so they've lowered the pressure on them and diverted it over towards the compressor station. Oh, it's a dirty business.
Oh,
dirty business. Yeah. So
tell me what's the of the people that there are, I mean, I see on Twitter and places, there's Mountain Valley compressors, there's compressors. Oh. I mean, what can those people do based on the FERC admission of improper
guilt.
Process. Yeah, guilt. what can they do? How can they use that?
Okay, so what they're going to be able to do is they're going to be able to latch on to environmental justice and climate change. and necessity. They're going to be able to latch onto the things that FERC has basically ignored forever, forever, even necessity. This is the crazy part, even necessity, because the reason the period that they recertified, that they extended that certification was watershed. The Access Northeast had been pulled, which was the second pipeline compressor coming in through there. And that had been pulled in August of 2018. At that point, there was absolutely no reason for the Weymouth Compressor Station. They did not need it at all.
Just to say, necessity is a term of art, I guess I would say, if I was smart enough. But I mean, necessity is a thing that the FERC says, is this power plant necessary to achieve some goal, however they did, probably societal good or something, right? And right. You're saying that go ahead. I mean, explain then what necessity means.
So in this case, it's not just, first of all, the company that wants the project has to show to FERC that they basically sold the gas, okay? That, you know, there's a certain, you know, FERC looks and says, oh, well, we see you have 80% contracted for, so,
they have
you
customers.
Know, it's a, right, you've got customers, it's a good project. At that point, and it got worse for them, Enbridge only had 60% subscription for the gas that they were putting through there. Okay, so they already had a low subscription rate. Canada was going south fast. Canada said, you guys are taking too long. We're going to circumvent you. We're not going to take the gas from you.
Right. So, this is the export terminal on the water at the edge of up in Newfoundland someplace that was actually going to put the stuff on the ships. That port was getting cold feet about whether or not Enbridge would ever deliver anything, right?
Right. And that was, it was in Goldboro, Nova Scotia. And unfortunately, that's reared its ugly head again in a different variation. But they were already in Canada talking about, we're just going to circumvent the United States. We got a ton of gas in Alberta. What the heck are we talking about? You know, we'll just have to, you know, ship it sideways. So they had already kind of lost that thing. And then they began to lose subscriptions from other customers who had signed on to take the gas. So that's one level of necessity. And in the case of the Weymouth Compressor Station, they had to prove that, in fact, the compressor station was needed to push that gas further up into Maine. Now, according to the Atlantic Bridge Project, and here's one of the huge mistakes that FERC made, they were saying, we need this compressor station because we want to push an additional 133 million standard cubic feet a day. And we need that compressor station to pressurize the gas to do that. Except I've got an engineer in California telling me, no, they didn't. This engineer said, FERC never, and this was prior to this argument, FERC never should have signed off on that because they didn't need that compressor station for that amount of gas. All they had to do was turn up the volume in Burrillville and in Elliott, Maine. That's all they had to do.
Burrillville being in Rhode Island, a compressor station in Rhode Island, and then another station north of Boston up in Maine.
In Maine.
Wow.
And so for this 133 million standard cubic feet, they never needed to build the Weymouth compressor station. So we knew the only reason they wanted it for the Atlantic Bridge was because the Access Northeast was coming in right behind it. But when the Access Northeast got pulled off the table, Weymouth Compressor Station was no longer needed, ever. And FERC had the opportunity in the beginning of 2019 to pull it off the table and say, you guys don't need that. And they didn't. You can't make this stuff up, Ted. You just can't.
So, Alice, tell me, if how can people help? What should they do? Can they contribute money to, I mean, where would they go? What's the website to learn more and keep up? I mean, this is a masterclass. I mean, your description is so clear and so interesting. I mean, what should, if somebody wants to do or learn about this stuff, where should they go?
Okay. They should go to nocompressor.com. And the best place to go, I always tell people, you know, there's lots of good information on there, but the news dropdown, go all the way back to 2015. And I have to say that one of our board members, Reverend Betsy, said to me the other day, because I was saying seven years. She says, Alice, she said, we're going into year eight. And I went, oh, stop it, Betsy, stop it. So yeah, there's a lot of information there, and it kind of gives the history, not just of the project and all that we've done, but what we've done, exactly the steps that have been taken all along the way.
And that is a template for all people in other places that may be facing, I mean, this the sort of the whack-a-mole game that climate activists have to play against all these crazy pipelines. But I mean, your work in Weymouth has sort of defined a path that would help other people. It's a remarkable story. What I'll do is I'll put up those links, nocompressor.com, right? And to some of the other things we've talked about, and we'll put up links on the blog at the Mass Climate Action website. That's massclimateaction.org/blog. So you can get the hot links there. I would say it's Elf on Sight. At Elf on Sight is a good thing to follow. It just is a lot of visuals and gives you a sense of where they are. If you have comments or questions about the things on this show, things we ought to be talking about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what are our good topics. I'm sure you're listening to this podcast on your smartphone using Stitcher or one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please tell all of your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. It's your climate action for the week. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak up. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Alice, again, I'll repeat my phrase, masterclass, insight. You're marvelous at explaining things. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Thank you so much for having me back on, Ted. It's great to be with you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.